everyone, and welcome to the Mostly AI Smart Pod from the editors of AI Impact Smart Brief. I'm Susan Rush, and today, along with my co-hosts, Michael Domingo and Victoria Martinez, we'll be talking about AI in the enterprise. We have a fascinating interview with AI expert Brad Stacey, who's the Director of Enterprise AI at Future. But don't worry, we also have our usual segments. Last Week in AI, I'll Talk with the NotBots, and Vicky's 2-Minute Tech Pulse. Take it away, Domingo.
Last week with AI, we're changing things up a bit. I pondered three things, and then one thing just kind of stuck out. And I'll talk about that, but first, the honorable mentions. The first one was purpose-built AI PCs that are expected in the fall. That's the one about the NVIDIA RTX Spark chips that the PC makers are working with to embed in new PCs and laptops in the fall that can do AI without having to connect to the cloud. And then my other honorable mention is the story of running a law firm on 67 AI agents. Imagine that, right? 67 AI agents. 67? Okay. I bet you didn't expect that, right? That service is called Laverne, by the way, and I'm not sure why. But the coolest AI story for me last week was the New York Jets. They're taking an AI-first mentality into the front office and into the whole corporate culture. Microsoft Copilot, which is the official AI for the National Football League, of course, is what they're going to be using to drive all the AI use for player physical fitness, to strategy, to planning. And eventually, they're going to see that trickle down through the organization all the way to ticket sales and even vendor management. According to the report in the Sports Business Journal, the new effort actually started about 2 years ago. They just hired Iwao Fusillo. He's a lifelong Jets fan who has done stints at Data Crunchers, as a data cruncher at PepsiCo, General Motors, and Amex. He was just hired earlier this year as the team's chief data and analytics officer to form the plan and lead the effort. And I kind of thought it was interesting in the article. One Redditor asked ChatGPT what it would take to, quote, make the Jets a Super Bowl contender. And the Redditor basically got this weird answer, quote, change the coaching staff completely and somehow get a top 10 offense by year two, end quote. Whether using AI results in a future Super Bowl, all this Raiders fan has to say is good luck coming next season. All right. That's it for me. You got something, Vicky?
Yeah. So three things on my radar, which I'm sure is on everyone's radar, data centers. They're, especially living in Florida, there is a huge debate on data centers right now. The new tools, which I'll talk about in the 2-Minute Tech Pulse, and basically the AI IPO race. It's like everyone's trying to jump in, get theirs out. So those are my three on my radar.
Those are really fun responses. From chat about the poor Jets. Who knows, maybe they can turn it around. Always have hope for them, beginning of every season. So we'll see. So what am I watching? Apple. I think everyone is. You know, they have their worldwide developer conference, and AI is really leaning into Apple Intelligence and Siri. You know, Tim Cook, he's really hyping the integration, that tight integration of Apple's hardware and software, and just saying how it really opens up some possibilities. You know, this is pretty interesting given the fact that last week Microsoft made a big move declaring its AI independence and really trying to create some space between it and OpenAI. One of the other fun things that's been on my mind is Hasbro. They're creating their own AI studio, and they're going to be launching and licensing their brands and their big characters to third parties. Now, Disney tried this recently in another form. It didn't go so well. So I'm really interested to see what Hasbro has in store and how it unfolds. So keep your eye on that.
You know, it's something, it's kind of funny, on the marketing side, what we're seeing just from like advertising wise, people, consumers are actually not as inclined to pay attention to AI ads. And if Hasbro is going to make an entire AI studio, how is that going to reflect if consumers' opinions right now is they don't want to see a full AI. They're like, okay with a little bit, but not an entirely created AI advertisement. So I wonder how that's going to translate into a whole movie or whatever creative outlets they make.
Yeah, really valid point.
Yeah, I like, right now, even thinking about AI and ads, you know, the Coca-Cola, when they did the ads during the Christmas, they were like fully AI. And I kind of actually didn't really care. I love the depictions of the, you know, and I, you know, it's like graphics is already kind of AI-ish looking anyway, so it didn't really matter that much to me. But I don't know if that's going to make any difference going forward. But I mean, you're talking about somebody who's probably like more accepting of AI in advertising than most people. I mean, this is a different generation that's being sold to, I guess, right?
Well, it's interesting. Like, if you think about like the what is you know, how relevant, how's the closeness between CGI and AI? Like, I mean, how do you know the difference? Where do you know which is which and what created what? I think that's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, just real quick. It's funny. One of the Super Bowl commercials, it's skipping my mind which one, they made a point of saying, oh, we didn't use any AI. It was all CGI. And I remember watching the commercial thinking it was made with AI. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it'll be harder to distinguish. But fun to watch for sure.
All right. You can find links to the Last Week in AI in the episode guide for this this podcast, as well as the breakdown section of the AI Impact Smart Brief newsletter, which you subscribe to. Now let's move on to an interview that Susan conducted last week with Brad Stacey, with a look into the future, as it were. And by future, I mean the parent company of Smart Brief and the Mostly AI Smart Pod. Brad is director of enterprise AI and future, and in this interview, he talks about developing an AI strategy for the enterprise and the general philosophy that drives AI use across the future spectrum of products and content, including Smart Brief.
Hi, Brad. Thanks so much for joining me today to discuss AI strategies for the enterprise.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So I know you've said, you know, this is the year of AI for future. So kind of a two-part question, you know, strategy-wise, where are the biggest opportunities? And then how are you shifting that corporate mindset from basic AI awareness to actual operational adoption?
Yeah, brilliant. I think the two are really linked. Like, my philosophy on this is really, really simple, which is that I'm eager that everybody has the opportunity to do their best and most ambitious work. Right. So rather than talking about, you know, how few people could do a thing or how fast we could do a thing, I would rather we all collectively focus on doing stuff that serves our readers really well, doing stuff that, you know, really leans into our superpowers and what people want and need from us. And I think it's complementary. I think it answers both questions in terms of what are the opportunities. So, you know, using AI to cover things in more depth than we'd have done before, or produce interactive features, or whatever else. But also, you know, the shift in mindset comes from achieving really cool things using this tech, and you know, being really aligned that the purpose is to do our best work. So that's it. And that's not a new strategy. You know, it's been my focus for my entire career has been, you know, enabling people to do great things with the best possible tech. And I think that applies, you know, especially at future.
Yeah, I love the way you frame that, you know, just giving people the opportunity and then the ability to do their best work, you know, because I think that's what everyone at every company is striving for. So I think it's a really great way to frame the beginning of this conversation. You know, what possibilities do you think open up for an organization when they stop viewing AI as just a productivity tool and begin using it to uncover new opportunities?
Yeah. So, you know, going back to most ambitious work, I think we could all probably recall like loads of great ideas in our career that weren't feasible, but we, you know, dearly wish we'd done, right? So I think there's a big tranche of, you know, being brave and seeing things differently and, you know, knowing that the tech allows us to do stuff that we otherwise would not have been able to do. So again, talking about interactive features, you know, some of my colleagues have been able to use, you know, vibe coding tools to build prototypes of things in hours that would have been, you know, weeks or months of work before. So I think there's a whole tranche of brilliant ideas that could be reactivated, and then discovering whole new ideas as well. So we're doing quite a lot around synthetic research. So, you know, taking virtual panels of people that, you know, represent our audience and testing ideas against them to see what sticks and what we might actually take to real people and everything else. So we think that we can generate, you know, more high quality ideas that then become, you know, features, marketing messages, you know, editorial campaigns that end up in front of our users eventually. So yeah, it's, you know, do more, do better, you know, in quite an ambitious way. One of the real tricks is just helping people understand like what is even possible. Because there are some things that a few years ago that would have seemed like absolutely magical that we totally take for granted today, you know, like the transcript, high quality transcriptions from meetings being sent around to all the participants immediately would have been, you know, pure magic 10 years ago and is now, you know, quite common and, you know, a feature that's missed when it's not enabled.
Yeah, I love that. And it's so true. You know, it's amazing, you know, what people can embrace and get used to as normal and then be able to take that to the next level. So that becomes the magic of the day, right?
And it's shifting currently. You know, it always, you know, the window of what is possible and what is acceptable and what is expected is, you know, moving quicker than ever, isn't it? It's quite difficult to keep up sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to look a little bit more at AI from the product perspective. You touched on a little bit, you know, but user behavior is changing rapidly. So, you know, how is AI being used at Future to build more interactive features that match how our readers and users are actually wanting to consume content today?
Yeah, so it's a bit of a tricky one, this one, because Future's entire proposition is being a trusted specialist media brand. So we have to be really careful with the trust that our users give us. And in particular, we can't engage in the, what some people call the inshitification of the internet, you know, like making things cheap and crap, and, you know, not fun or engaging or anything like that. So we have to be quite selective with the features that we launch. And we have to be very user aligned, right? We have to do something that is unambiguously great for the user and not just the, you know, marginally great, you know, like much better to justify its existence, you know, because people will ask bluntly, you know, why did you use AI to do this, right? And some of our verticals, you know, there is real hostility towards AI. If you look at the gaming community, for example, people that are passionate about the artistry of gaming are eager that AI doesn't creep into the production of gaming and you know, produce inferior experiences for them. And when they see, you know, if they were to see unnecessary AI features on our gaming sites, they'd immediately say, well, what is the purpose of this, right? So we have to be very selective. But we actually already see it quite a lot in our product. So one of our really early uses of AI was around getting people like the best and most relevant content as they're browsing our sites. So we have a really good recommender engine called Advisor, which says, you know, if you've read this article, you're probably really going to like that. And that's been really great for our users because it means they get to, you know, sort of mine the depths of our specialist content in a way that they wouldn't have been able to before because there's such a premium on, you know, the space that you have to surface to people. Another really exciting one, this originally started as a project called ESA last year and it won some awards in its form back then. But we will soon be launching a chatbot for Who, What, Where that is built into ChatGPT. You know, the light bulb moment for us was, you know, heaven help you if you're turning to ChatGPT for fashion advice, right? Even someone that's fashion inept like me, you know, knows that it's going to be a disaster. So now you can at who, what, where. And when it gives you advice, it will build up a profile based on its knowledge of you. You know, I'm a British male in my late 30s, you know, that has a busy toddler to run around and everything else. And it will take that into account when it gives responses, but it will also take our editor's opinion into account. So, you know, it might look something, it might scour our database for something that's on trend and a bit casual, you know, that might suit, you know, my lifestyle or my look or, you know, the vibe I'm going for or whatever else. So, you know, we're very rapidly building some really interesting stuff, which we think, you know, is really aligned for our users. I suppose the last thing to say about all of that is, you know, all of this is enabled by using AI in the production of as well. So, you know, our coders are increasingly using AI to build things quicker and build more ambitious things. You know, there are some things that years ago they would have sort of sucked their teeth and said, oh, gosh, that's going to be a lot of work. We might have to hire a few people to get that done. And actually it's gotten turned around quite quickly because they're using really cool, you know, virtual coding colleagues to help them get it done. So I'm really optimistic about what it means for our product. And actually, you know, of my responsibilities, you know, trying to guide that is probably the bit that I find most exciting.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting. Yeah, I mean, having great fashion advice with also human in the loop, right? So, you know, you're not just trusting the computer to help you. You're also relying on that expertise of our editors. I think that's great.
And yeah, our hypothesis is really simple. It is that, you know, AIs just don't have taste. Certainly not as good as our editors. And being able to mix those things together is something we think is really interesting.
So, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was enterprises need an AI competent workforce. And then as your role as director of enterprise AI, you know firsthand that training and upskilling is a vital part of success. I know Future is really leaning into this, making sure that its employees are in the know and on the cutting edge. And then you also have a college level AI training initiative I know you're excited about. So if you could talk a little bit about that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, perfect. So yeah, upskilling is really, really broad for us. So it's everything from casual drop-in sessions to online resource hubs through to, you know, mandatory training like we all have to go through from time to time. But as you've rightly highlighted, our college level apprenticeship program is something that we're especially proud of. So in the UK, the UK government has a program called the Apprenticeship Levy, which is sort of a form of tax that has to be spent on training. So we found a partner to help us use those tax funds to upskill our workforce. So we have started with a program called the AI Champions, which is a year-long program to build competence in using the tools. So people are paired with industry-leading lecturers. They're paired with, you know, instructors to help them get stuff done. They're given access to really compelling software. This would normally cost, if I was to enroll myself or a friend or a colleague or a family member, you know, it might cost $10,000, $12,000 per person. But we're able to do that completely cost-free for the individual and for the business. We currently have a crop of 30 people going through that year-long program. They're a couple of months in. I'm already getting reports back from the institution that's delivering it, and the results are stunning. We've already got some brilliant like automations and ideas and expertise growing up. And these people are across the entire business. You know, some of them are editors, some of them are finance people, some of them, you know, are and the tech team and everything else. The level of the program is degree level. So they will all have an FDSC after their name once they've done that, like a computer science degree. We're soon going to be launching two follow-up programs. So one is another cohort of that same program. So to get another 30 or so people that level of competency. And we're also looking to do an MBA-style program for our leaders as well to make them AI-competent leaders, so to be able to sustain, you know, the disruption and change that we're going through and everything else. We're really, really happy to be offering that. I mean, you know, if I had asked to to hire 70 degree level AI experts, you know, it would cost a lot. You know, my CFO probably wouldn't be having it. But to grow that expertise out of, you know, our best, most capable, fondest employees is a real privilege. So we're very happy to be doing it.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think that's a really important takeaway, you know, investing in the people that you have on your staff. It's not always about going out and finding someone. And, you know, there's always the worry about, I'm going to get replaced by AI. And, you know, this program proves, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, you have to, as an employee, be willing to learn, you know, and I think that's important. Mm-hmm. It's all part of the upskilling and desire on both sides, but it's important for the company to be
I've got two things to add on that. One is, you know, on the importance of growing our own people, yes, we can give someone a degree in AI. We can't give someone a degree in future, right? So, you know, them having been here for a while and really understood the business, I think is a distinct advantage. And second, you know, we're going to all go through a lot of disruption in the next few years. And I really feel like being able to walk away with a degree in AI is a gift to the employee as well. You know, it's going to make them much more versatile. It's going to make them much more confident with whatever the next thing is at Future or anywhere else. So yeah, again, you know, very privileged to be able to be doing that with these great people.
That's great. So what do you think is the biggest roadblock, you know, keeping enterprises kind of moving from that demo phase to kind of really a full rollout at the enterprise level?
Yeah, perfect. So I would say the biggest difficulty is adaptability. So for a long time, businesses have been rewarded based on execution, right? Find a brilliant thing to do, do it really well and scale it, right? But actually adaptability is something that we all find really, really difficult. You know, for example, our early AI use cases were, I don't know, let's sprinkle a little bit of AI on the CMS to auto-generate an alt tag. So, okay, great. That is good. And it's good for our users because it means the site is more accessible, but it's hardly going to change the world, right? So the biggest skill that I'm trying to foster in, you know, the people that are closest to me at the moment and the people that have real leverage in the business is a skill of unlearning, right? Looking at a process and saying, how could this be completely different? Because the circumstances have changed so radically with the technology that we have access to. And of course, it's changing so rapidly still. So like unlearning and being adaptable, I think is really, really important. And it's a tricky skill to learn as an individual. It's an even trickier skill to engender in a workforce of 3,000 people. But it's something we're you know, working hard to develop, reward the people that do that well and, you know, really lean into it. I think the other blocker is probably around like curiosity as well. So making sure that, you know, your workforce isn't afraid to challenge pre-made conceptions or consider, you know, completely new things to do with this tech or whatever else. I would say finally as well, there's a prioritization problem. So we're lucky that we have a really decent engineering team. You know, relative to the size of the company, we're so blessed to have hundreds and hundreds of engineers, which is fantastic. However, what gets an engineer like really curious and engaged often isn't, you know, what's really good for the business. So there's a certain amount of like trying to get the stars aligned of, you know, something that an engineer really wants to do, something that's really good for our users, something that's really valuable for the business, and, you know, prioritizing against those axes. Because, you know, we could spend 400 engineers worth of time building an amazing science lab project that doesn't actually kind of move the needle in any sort of significant way. So yeah, do stuff that has an impact, I think, and prioritize sort of relentlessly is super, super important to us.
Okay, great. Well, those were some great pieces of advice for people listening in today. And maybe just I can pull one more out of you. You know, for a business leader listening today, you know, who wants to make 2026 their landmark year for AI as well, you know, what's that first step they need to take to make it a reality?
This is going to sound so ridiculously basic and not even like advice, really, but it is to just do something. I remember in my early days when I started learning AI and you know, introducing businesses to it. This is, you know, long before ChatGPT came along. And there was this general perception that, you know, it's IBM, it's Tesla, it's Facebook, it's Google that do AI. And AI isn't for the rest of us, right? And we all know that's changed quite a lot. You know, we've all become power users of AI in many ways, in our personal lives and our professional lives, certainly if you consider how things have changed in the last few years. So I would say do something, like build momentum, because momentum is your friend in this instance. And what you can't afford to do, nobody can afford to do this, is like stop and wait for the perfect solution to land in your lap. Right. There is going to be no perfect model. There's going to be runners and riders. There will be an AOL of this, you know, that sort of, you know, was a giant one day and then 10 years on is, you know, it no longer exists or whatever else. So commit and do something. Celebrate your successes, learn from your losses, and just try and keep it rolling, I think is the most important thing. Something that was like totally impossible 6 months ago might be like eminently achievable today. So being willing to sort of go back to the well and, you know, reappraise good ideas, I think is really important as well. Getting started is the hardest thing in almost anything. You know, we're all intimidated by a blank page when we're writing a new report or by a blank text box when we're starting to use an AI for the first time. But we also know that getting to the start line is a big part of, you know, success, and taking your first steps is, you know, really, really important. I would also say don't get too distracted by the noise. There is this sense that AI is moving faster than even the best people can keep up with. But actually, fundamentally, there have only been a few really good ideas that have come through in the last year. And, you know, a lot of what we've heard since has been, you know, like marketing and positioning and jostling and everything else. And if you get too swept up by the there is something new to focus on every week, you're not going to get anything done. So being really aligned with the fundamental, you know, purpose of your business, your users, your colleagues, you know, the impact that you're here to make, and just doing something, I think is probably the right advice.
Well, that's great. You said it was going to be super simple and basic, but I think you really outlined a great plan for someone who wants to jump in. So that's great. You know, Brad, I could sit here and talk to you all day about this, but I know you have to get back to it. But I really appreciate you sharing your insights and everything going on at Future. There's some exciting things happening. You've given our listeners a lot to think about. So thank you so much.
Lovely. Thank you for having me, Susan.
I hope you enjoyed listening to that interview as I just had so much fun talking to Brad. He's got a real vision. It was really cool to listen to his approach to, you know, strategy, operations, and products. But one of the things that really stood out to me was him talking about employees and their skill set. You know, upskilling is kind of turned into a word that a lot of people don't like. But Brad talked about it from a different vantage point, talking about helping employees unlearn, you know, really kind of moving away and knowing that it's okay to let go of some of those outdated approaches to your everyday work or to product development, and really embrace the efficiencies and realities that AI can bring to the workforce. Domingo, do you have any ideas about that?
Yeah, I had written down some notes about this. I just looked at this morning. Stanford Online has a blog post that will point to you in the episode guide about the definitions for upskilling and reskilling. And it says that reskilling is, quote, "reskilling is often pursued to pivot to a different career or industry due to changes in job demand or personal career goals," end quote. So if you think about reskilling, what it is, it's pretty much unlearning. It's kind of like the definition of unlearning, right? You do this all the time. For context, I think about what we do in our jobs daily, or, you know, like, well, maybe weekly. We don't do software upgrades every day, but every once in a while we do a software upgrade here in future. And so I'm not going to talk about what our specific software is that we use, but once we make this transition, it's like, you know, everyone hates change, right? But we do it all the time. We do a complete reinstall of the software. We got to learn that. We got to unlearn things, essentially, to learn the new software. And at the same time, the upgrade often requires unlearning old skills. You get accustomed to the old program and you have no direct relation to the newly updated software, basically. You got to like learn something absolutely new. So I think that same goes for, you know, basically even our phones, right? You know, we have apps that you always like, you have a favorite app and all of a sudden they update it and you got to go to the update and it's absolutely different. And like, oh gosh, got to learn that, right? So there you go. You have to, so for AI, same thing, got to learn new prompts. AI, they go through incremental improvements. I mean, what ChatGPT is already on like another dot release for this week, you know, and it was like 2 weeks ago, they had just another one, right? And so I'm just basically saying you're basically an old dog who has to learn new tricks. So that's kind of my opinion on that.
I mean, honestly, looking at his whole viewpoint, I love the fact that it's not necessarily, you know, hey, we're going to replace employees. What I love is that it's more like, this is going to help you be the best version of the employee that you can be, like helping us with research, helping us, you know, vibe coding. It's just little things that are helping us. I mean, let's be real. I don't have the time of day to pull all the analytics. We should have somebody who's going to help me on analytics. That is not me. I am not mathematical at all. So at least with having the tools that they're helping us, you know, research and like back up the information that we already know and that it's just giving us that extra layer of confidence that we are putting out the best work, like the best research, and it helps us just be better. Like it helps us, again, it is definitely, I think the outlook is more of, let's give you the tools you need to be your best self versus like, let's let you, you know, learn new things just because we want to get rid of you. I love the outlook that it's more, let's give you what you need to do your job the best way you can.
Vicky, you have some thoughts about data centers. I think that's kind of like another topic we wanted to discuss in this episode. And fascinating.
Yeah,
and
there's a lot of stuff that's going on with it. I'm sure you've been seeing I don't know if it's just because, you know, now I am researching more about AI, but my algorithm has been populating all these segments that are not just the typical AI data center conversations that are happening all across the US where, you know, small communities are fighting. They're at their town hall, making their voices heard because they don't want them there. But one thing that I've also been seeing that isn't as much widely spoken about is the impact on the environment and the amount of thermal heat that gets radiated off of these data centers. So yes, there are definitely some pros to these data centers, but if you look at it from an environmental standpoint, is it really worth it? And what can we do to really create a data center that that's going to basically work in balance with the community, with the environment? You know, it's a big topic and it's obviously going to get bigger because more and more tech companies are jumping into the AI game. And we just, obviously this needs to, something has to happen, but what would be the solution? How do we get there? Like, what do we think?
Yeah. So, you know, it's really interesting. You know, I was looking at a recent Gallup poll. This isn't a solution, but, you know, 4 in 10 Americans are basically like NIMBY, right? No AI data center in my backyard. And I think it's really important, and we definitely need a solution. But at the same time, you know, AI use is skyrocketing, not even only just at the enterprise level, but also among individuals. You know, people are using ChatGPT and Gemini, you know, to plan their next vacation, to figure out if the Jets can possibly win, right? So yeah, I think it's a real problem. And I know there are some really interesting ideas, and I know partly maybe putting those AI data centers in the ocean. You know, what do you think, Domingo?
Well, you know, that actually used to be my part of my beat. I used to cover data centers with another company when I was writing for them. Basically, it was part of Microsoft's like infrastructure initiative. And it's not the initiative, an infrastructure as you think of infrastructure, like, you know, roads and everything else. But instead, it's the infrastructure needed for moving data globally. It's like, you know, the data centers, cables, all sorts of stuff, and how energy is used. So they would have data centers spread all over the place just for, what do you call it, for backup. You know, if one data center goes out in Scotland, they know that one in Brazil is going to spin back up, and they're going to have another data center with all the data from that center up, right? So anyways, so I did some digging into the past, and there's a lot of stuff about Project Natick. That's the whole thing with Microsoft, that project that they did. They basically took a steel cylinder and dumped it into the North Sea and used the cold water to basically keep this thing running efficiently, because, you know, data centers generate immense amounts of heat. And if you've ever been in a data center and their AC is not running quite right, it actually feels pretty warm in there. And then, you know, that's why they always have them like deathly cold if you've ever been in one. So anyways, they dumped this thing back in like 1998, and then 2 years later they brought it back up, and they've done some research and they found that that's highly reliable, energy efficient, and it just the icy cold of the Scottish coast was like perfect, right? Anyways, it's supposed to be a phase two, but they never got to it. And so there's efforts right now to do that. There's in fact one in China there that was subsea data center off Hainan Island, and California actually there's a company that wants to do that here. However, highly regulated. That's the problem, you know, of course, because that might have been one effort. When they brought the thing up, there was actually like algae and stuff clinging to this thing. So there is a lot of heat that's being generated enough in the cold Scottish waters that they actually had like living things on the data center. So, of course, in California, you dump that thing in the California waters, it's a lot warmer than the Scottish waters. They're going to have some environmental issues more than likely. So it needs more study. That's just one data center that they did this experiment with. So right now it's like, you know, it's going to take years to do that. The company is Spin, and they're basically partnering. Although actually I take that back. It's not Spin. That was another company. It's called Net Oceans or something like that. I can't remember what it was. I should have written it down, right? But there are data centers for your backyard, believe it or not. Basically, a company called Spin, they're working with NVIDIA to build these like little HVAC centers. And we did a poll about this, and I've even asked about that question about, you know, whether you have to actually have a data center in your house. And that's basically what it is, a data center in your house. What it does is actually it regulates the amount of, I'm going to stop using the word regulate because that sounds like law, right? It basically monitors how much energy is coming out of your house. And most houses use about 40% of the energy that's being like, sucked up by the wires in your house. What it does is Spin will take that 60% and they'll figure out what to do with that 60%. And they'll basically say, okay, we can use that for AI data center processing. And so they redirect it there. It's kind of an awesome kind of use for it. And I kind of like that idea, but I don't know. People are still, even you say data center in my backyard and at data center in my home, they're just like, no, absolutely not, right? And I think I'm on the side of, hey, I'll take it. I'll put a data center in my house if I can take advantage of it. And there's supposed to be some incentives to do that. So I don't know what your thoughts are on these.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, data center in the ocean. You know, at first it's like, wow, that's interesting. It keeps it off, you know, off the land, out of the backyard, but long term, what's that going to do to the ocean? So I don't know. Yeah. At the beginning of this, Vicky was like, we need a solution. I don't think we're there yet. But I think there was a lot of good ideas. Something's happening. We'll see how it shakes out.
I mean, we're definitely going to hear more about this because, like you said, AI continues to explode. So, I mean, it's definitely going to be a conversation that will be had more and more, and we're going to be hearing about more and more.
All right. Hey, check this out. Before I logged in, to this segment, I had to write this note real quick. I got something from Business Insider that said they have a data center tracker. You can find out where the data centers are being built around your house. So I haven't checked and looked. I just got this email just like recently. So, but I wouldn't imagine there's going to be one like a couple miles from here. So, or like a project, because there's a lot of empty land over here. And I can imagine they're going to build one sometime soon. This place needs the tax breaks. So anyways, let's go with the next segment. Vicky has the 2-minute tech pulse.
Like you said, ChatGPT has a lot of upgrades. The latest upgrade is one of the great things about this is that it is basically made a lot of interactive, rich charts. And so you can create better pie graphs, better line graphs, and they'll have web interface. They have a new screen writing blocks, which feature integrated tables. Contents have been introduced for long form reporting. And users are actually able to use send emails directly within ChatGPT. They can connect their Gmail or their Outlook account. These are basically, like ChatGPT is really trying to make this all-in-one workspace so that you like do everything from within the dashboard of ChatGPT, which is great. But at the same time, I definitely think that I'm not going to be trusting ChatGPT to have access to my Gmail or Outlook. The next, brought this up earlier, it is literally the battle of the billion-dollar IPOs. Anthropic has officially filed for an IPO. ChatGPT OpenAI is essentially fast tracking. Rumors are that they want to have a public offering as soon as September. Both of them are extremely, they're under a lot of pressure to make sure that they turn into some profitable enterprise. Obviously, it's all about the money, people. And then three, we're moving over to a little bit of cyber tech. Cisco has recently created the Cisco Cloud Control, which provides tools for businesses and governments, and it basically deploys to create and safeguard IT infrastructure, which we definitely need in this government because clearly a lot of leaked messages all over the place. So one of the things that Cloud Cisco Control offers is specialized tools for commercial and government entities. They will basically monitor any critical IT infrastructure. It also intercepts hackers and will mitigate the increasing risk because, again, with the increase in AI, there's also an increase of hacker activity, which we've seen, we've read about, it's a lot more prevalent. So this is Cisco Cloud Control is a great tool to help with, going against hackers. And that's the 2-minute tech pulse. Basic takeaway from this week is that everybody is preparing to make some money. They're going public. They're getting secure. But this is how, we're moving in the next phase of AI.
Thanks, Vicky. I think that'll wrap it for today. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends and colleagues. You can follow us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe to AI Impact Smart Brief.
The Mostly AI podcast is a production of Smart Brief, a future company.